Listening to Season 2, Episode 14, Mission Accomplished with Jason Elizalde.
Welcome to Let's Talk Parks. This is a collaborative project that gives a voice to emerging leaders in parks and recreation.
We believe every professional has the potential to make a difference in their organization and in their communities.
These are the stories of the future leaders who are navigating their career and finding their purpose through Parks and Rec.
Hello and welcome back to Let's Talk Parks. Thanks for being here today. Man, I just got done listening to this interview with Marissa and Jason Elizalde, and man, Jason is so passionate about this work. And I think that he's actually a great representation of all of our listeners, because I know all of you feel the same way. This whole podcast was created to share the stories of purpose-driven parks and recreation professionals, and that's exactly what we're doing. And I hope that at the end of this episode, you feel completely inspired. I literally got the chills listening to this, but you have to stay all the way until the end to hear it. That's the thing. But in this entire episode, you're going to hear some great thoughts that really made me think critically about some of the things that are commonly accepted in our field. And you guys know, like, I'm all about raising the bar. I'm all about challenging the status quo. But I'll give you an example. Jason talks about this idea of best practices, which I think we use a lot. And for me, I've always thought a bit about just guidelines that are, you know, created as a way to standardize some of what we do, and they're considered the best practices across agencies and maybe across just your organization. But this conversation really made me challenge that a little bit. And I realized that maybe these two simple terms are actually creating unconsciously reinforcing the status quo by saying that this is the best we can do, and we're just going to continue to practice it and do it like this. And I just wonder if we were to all take a hard look at those things that we say and we don't really give much thought to, and think about the ways that they could be holding us back. Man, they could make such a difference to those around us. So you're going to hear some of that conversation, but there's actually a couple other takeaways that Jason refers to throughout as Jason cliches, which I'm good with. Like, I love these. And number one is always put mission above task. Number two, separate the I cans from the I can'ts. And number three, don't worry about being right, worry about doing the right thing. And I love all of those. The last one reminds me of Brené Brown, which she has a mantra, which is, I am not here to be right. I'm here to get it right. And man, I just keep having to repeat myself over and over and over again, because right now, navigating so much right now, we're not here to be right all the time. We're just here to get it right, to learn and to understand and to admit when we're wrong. And this episode really reinforces that. So hope that you'll listen in to that whole episode to hear what Jason has to say. Let me tell you a little bit more about Jason. Jason has more than 20 years' experience in both training and leadership roles, first in the public sector with companies like Enterprise, T-Mobile, and Target. 7 years ago, Jason took a position at the gold medal winning Willa Mullane Park and Recreation District in Springfield, Oregon, and fell in love with the industry as a whole. After discovering his own purpose, Jason has been asked to speak to groups across the country about the importance of celebrating your why and developing an emotional connection to the work that we do. Speaking of connecting, go connect with Jason right now on LinkedIn. This guy is clearly going places, and he's got incredible insight, and I hear that he may be open to the right opportunity. Of course, if you've already signed up for our weekly podcast email, then you have the link to connect with him right in your inbox. That email drops every Thursday morning and provides you with a really nice, convenient link to the next episode. So go sign up. The link is over at letstalkparks.com/podcast, or you can find it over on our Instagram page. And speaking of Instagram, we just did our first Instagram competition. That was new to me. But it was really fun and a great success, I think. Congratulations to Emma Rose, who won a t-shirt, a bunch of stickers, and a water bottle. Anthony and Parks, that's his Instagram handle, also ran a competition and had a lot of success over there as well. So that was a lot of fun, and thanks to everyone who participated in that. And finally, before we get started, I have to share an iTunes review, and both of these came in on the same day, so I just chose whichever one came in first. I do a little happy dance every time we get a new review because they're just so nice. But okay, this one's called All Parks All the Time. We need this podcast now more than ever. Kudos to Becky and team, definitely team, to highlighting the incredible work happening in parks and recreation agencies across the country. Listen in for ideas or inspiration. I typically get both. And that review was left by Alum1979 in Apple Podcasts. And thank you so much for that. Literally made my day. And I owe a huge thank you to Anthony and Marissa, who are pouring so much of their time and enthusiasm and just their heart into this project. It's so fun and rewarding to work with both of them. So thank you guys for listening in too. All right, on to the show. Hope you enjoy.
Hey, Let's Talk Parks. I am here today with Jason Elisaldi. He is located out in Oregon. He hasn't always been a Parks and Rec professional. He has worked for Target prior to working in Parks and Recreation. My sister has also worked for Target for the last 13 years, so I know what a great corporation it is to work for and the skills that you can acquire while working for a corporation like Target. So Jason, do you want to give us some background about your experience working for Target and how this has impacted your career in Parks and Recreation?
Yeah, so thanks for having me. Target was a pretty impressive experience for me. Called it the red and khaki attacky. So first of all, it makes your dress code, your dress choices in the morning a lot simpler. Red shirt, khaki pants every day. So that was nice. Took some time off of the planning on a daily basis. So I started off at Target as a customer service executive team lead is what they call it. So basically a customer service manager for a store. So great background in the importance of what they call guest experience, and got really acclimated with receiving a lot of feedback from your customers or patrons on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis, and then having to take that feedback and do something with it. And then went into logistics, which was basically the process of the truck unload and merchandising and being responsible for more of the store financially, budgeting and, buying things for a dollar, selling it for two, the what retail is truly built upon. Target was a great experience. I got to do a lot of very cool things where they kind of saw a certain skill set in me and allowed me to step outside of my role to do other things throughout the district. I got to do a lot of training and development while I was there, and really fell in love with that aspect of kind of professional development, working as a mentor and kind of just trying this constant idea of trying to make things better. Definitely came from my time there. So about 7 years all in all at Target, and it was definitely a positive experience. I was very successful there. I promoted quickly. I made good money. I had a lot of influence. I had access. I was empowered to make decisions. I had amazing bosses, and I wasn't happy. which was one of those things at the time that I could never really put my finger on. I didn't really understand what the problem was. But I think where I'm at now and what I know now that I didn't necessarily know back then was that the unhappiness stemmed from the fact that I didn't have an emotional connection to the work we did there. I wasn't invested in our purpose. Target, retail, you're selling stuff, and stuff is not a very inspirational product. So I got to a point where I realized that there was something missing and I needed to find something else to do. and applied for an office supervisor position at Willamette Lane Park and Recreation District, where I would be overseeing the front desk. And there was just something about, I didn't know anything about Parks and Rec at the time. It seemed like something that was had the potential to be a little bit bigger than me, chance to make a little bit more of an impact. And that was about 7 years ago, a little over 7 years ago, and just completely fell in love with the industry. And I'm just really, really happy to be part of it now.
That's awesome, because I feel like so many in our field, like me personally, I've been in this field for 15 years. And to give everyone reference, I'm 32. So I started out as a lifeguard and I have known nothing but parks and recreation. I did work a little bit of retail when I was a teenager, but that's the extent of it. So it's really cool to hear from people who have not been in this field their entire career and how they made that transition and how they realized that this field is so much more rewarding. Nothing against retail, nothing against Target. It's my favorite place to shop. I like to support my sister's 401k. But it's just, there's something that you get from parks and recreation. So I love hearing stories like that about going from a field that's completely different to parks and recreation. So thank you for sharing that story with us. I thought it was really, really key to what we're talking about today as well. So it seems like you live by a couple key phrases, and the first is to always put mission above tasks. So do you want to explain that to me a little bit?
Yeah, so mission above task, real simply put, task is what we do, mission is why we do it. So kind of there's constant reminder that we all have task-driven positions, we all have things that we need to accomplish on a daily basis, but my challenge to everyone is always to never lose sight that our tasks exist to enhance our mission, they do not define it. So while we might be in a situation in which we wanna be a purpose-focused organization, we do our tasks to positively impact our mission, but our mission will never be to accomplish more tasks. I have this story that I love to tell that I think is the greatest kind of just way to summarize this whole idea. And it's about an old Disney security guard. So this is a true story. So this is Freddie Wisnerick. So I tell this story in presentations and sometimes it makes me cry. So it's kind of an emotional thing for me. But anyway, Freddie retires from the German Navy after about 32 years. And him and his wife moved to Orlando, Florida. And after a couple weeks at home, his wife, for the first time in 30 some odd years, him being home all the time, his wife lets him know that he's driving her crazy and he needs to get out of the house, which is something I think we can all relate to little bit more right now. So Freddie goes and gets a part-time security guard job at Disney World simply because they're hiring. Freddie is not a Disney fan. He has very limited Disney knowledge. He was fairly certain that Mickey was a mouse, but that's about the end of his Disney fandom at that point. But part of your orientation at Disney is you're going to be challenged to find a way to impact what they call their guest experience every day. And so his first day of shadowing, Freddie notices these little girls who show up to the park dressed up as their favorite princesses, and these long lines that form so they could have the opportunity to get the autographs of their idols. And Freddie gets this idea. So he actually goes and spends his own money and buys an autograph book at the gift shop. And he would carry this autograph book with him every day at work. And anytime that he saw a little girl in costume, he would go up to them excitedly with this thick German accent. Oh my God, Cinderella, I can't believe you're here. Can I please have your autograph? So in a little less than 5 years, Freddie collected over 1,400 signatures. So 1,400 times he stepped away from his task to impact his mission. 1,400 lives touched, 1,400 magical experiences. He would say at his retirement speech that the hardest part for him was learning the differences between the princesses. You can't call Cinderella Sleeping Beauty. You can't call Belle Snow White. But everyone likes feeling special or important. And this was a very easy way for me to do that. it so easily could have just been a job for him. But he saw this opportunity to make a difference and he chose to take it. And you think about it, there's now 1,400 people out there who are telling the story of the day that a security guard made them feel like a princess. That resonates so strongly with me in this field, because we all have these positions where we have this opportunity to interact with these, with our community every day. And we never know who it is that we're going to impact or on what level that it was going to be, but it's going to be up. But it's that decision. It's making the decision that I'm going to go a little bit above today. And I think all of us have these opportunities on a daily basis. And think about your organizations and where it is that you're working. And you probably have examples like this that are happening in your organization right now. Are you celebrating them? Are you celebrating the staff members that are putting mission above task? Or are we still celebrating those task-based things? Are we celebrating the situations where it's the people who are the best at following their job description? Or are we celebrating these amazing opportunities to impact the lives of the people that we're serving?
That was an awesome story. I feel so inspired now.
Little Freddie. Yeah. Freddie gets you every time.
Yeah. Well, now I'm going to get like one of those bracelets. What would Freddie do?
What would Freddie do? Yeah.
Yeah. Because, well, and I think a lot as Parks and Rec professionals, a lot of times we do reference Disney. I can tell you that several times in my customer service trainings and customer service committees that I've served on, we always go to like the policy manual for Disney. And how do they do things? And how do they make it the happiest place on earth, not just for the people who visit, but for like their employees? So actually, I had been researching culture fit a couple months ago. And again, they referenced Disney and how this guy had a story about working for Disney and how it was so easy to follow it because they hired based on... Yeah. Could you fit this, the Disney culture? And I think Freddie definitely, you know, on the outside, he may not have embodied the Disney culture, but going and asking little girls for their autographs is just, I want to cry. Like, I think that is awesome.
My dream job, that will be retirement. That is like, when I am done with a professional career, I am moving to Orlando. I am becoming a security guard and I'm getting little girls' autographs. This Aww. Is my career path is planned out. This is 100% what I'm going to do.
See, my you mentioned
the Disney connection thing. So my real kind of falling in love with Parks and Rec was at, it was at the NRPA conference in 2018. And so there's a really famous Mark Twain quote that the two most important days of a person's life are the day they were born and the day they find out why. So I like to say that my find out why date was September 25th, 2018. And it was when I went to a customer service training session at the NRPA conference, which was super funny because I have both seen and given more customer service trainings in my life than I can count through my background. But in the course description, there was a line about creating a Disney-like experience. And I am a Disney fanatic, like over the top. I have an annual pass, live in Oregon. I go to Disneyland 6 to 7 times a year.
Holy cow.
So I go to the session on customer service, was put on by Neelay Bott, who I'm sure people are familiar with. And I'm just sitting there watching this guy talk, and I'm like, this is what it's about. Like, this is what we're supposed to be doing. And really has changed my life and my purpose and where it is that I'm trying to go and the things that I'm trying to accomplish. And this kind of idea of speaking purpose into people and developing those emotional connections with the work that they do all stem from, seriously, a session that I had no business going into. And, but again, just all it was creating a Disney-like experience. And it's definitely changed my entire career path.
I love that. And now I'm going to spend the rest of the day thinking about the day I realized why I was born. So
yeah. There you go.
So now I'm going to be thinking about that the rest of the day. Thanks a lot, Jason. That's not a bad thing. I should be thinking about that. That's what our listeners should be thinking about right now. Everyone.
Day you were born and day you find out why. Two most important days of a person's life.
Yes. Everyone pause the podcast right now and think about why you were born. What is your purpose? Why are you here? So,
love it. I love that.
So on to one of your next sayings or mantras, separating the I can from I can't. So explain that to us.
I can and I can't, I think it's become really prevalent dealing with the pandemic, because I think we find ourselves in these situations every day where it's really easy to find all the reasons why we cannot do something. I was on a cost recovery webinar about 2 months or so back, and one of the presenters, Jamie Sabach, made a comment that we cannot be about our programs. We have to be about our impact. And that really resonated. And I think it's especially now when you're kind of looking at these situations where we're having to make all of these really drastic changes to the way that we operate. And we realize that if it's about the program, there's programs we can't run anymore, right? That's the 800-pound gorilla in every room. There's things that are out there that we can't run for, whether it's physical distancing guidelines that we need to follow, or if it's financial goals that we're not going to be able to meet. There's a lot of reasons to not do things. The I can mentality, it comes from focusing on impact. What is it that we can do? So if the goal is we need to run a youth after school program, there's a million reasons why that can't happen. Whether it's we're tied into the schools and the schools aren't going to open, or we're not going to have space or whatever. Whereas if the goal becomes we need to find a way to positively impact the youth in our community, that is a more open statement, and that becomes something that we can then turn our focus. What can we do that ties into this, that ties into this objective? It's really just as simple as anytime I think you're generally going to have anything that comes across your table, your plate, anything that you're looking at, you have this initial reaction to it. And it's either, okay, I can do this, or okay, I can't do this. And you find in the people that you interact with, you know, the people who initially are just going to come out and tell you why something can't happen. And you know, the people who are going to come at you and instantly start going into, okay, well, let's figure out what we can do. And it's just, it's a decision. It's as simple as when those things come forward, am I looking at this through the negative lens? Am I talking about what I can't do? Or am I willing to remove the apostrophe T and simply look at it through the vision of I can? And I think it is the difference between trying to do things that are above and beyond, trying to constantly find ways to do things better, and the just kind of being willing to accept, well, this is who we are. The line I like to throw out there is like, no child has ever said that I want to be mediocre when I grow up. And that I think comes from these people who strive for this continuous strive to get better every day, or continuous improvement, are the ones who just look at every single thing that comes forward, not as a problem, but as an opportunity, and looking at it through what can we do? How can we have this impact? And, I just love, and it's really important right now, this idea that especially now we need to be about impact, not about programs right now. There's a lot of stuff that we can't run, but we still have this obligation to our communities to be able to positively impact them. And we do that through the outcomes.
So that makes me think of one of my coworkers. I'm going to give a shout out to Kelly over at Mundelein Park District. It makes me think of her because she normally runs our birthday parties at our park district, which are phenomenal in person. I mean, they sell out very early. They are anything you could dream of and more. It's not something you would expect a park district to put on. So obviously during COVID, we can't have birthday parties. We can't have 20 little girls in a room dressed up singing Frozen and doing Frozen activities.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing.
I know. Everyone check out our Mundelein Park District Instagram page for inspiration for your birthday parties, because they are out of this world. And she puts the same detail and effort into our special events. So I love Kelly. She's awesome. But during this, she saw that, okay, everyone's doing car parades for people's birthdays and things like that. How do we make it so that we as a park district can make those more special? So she started doing these balloon displays. And so that girl, bless her heart, they put one together for my husband's birthday this year. It's just, there's probably 100 balloons tied together intricately, and she ties it to the banister of your front porch or your, you know, downspout or whatever. But it just makes it that much more special. And just, again, the detail she puts into it, just like her birthday parties. So she saw that there was something she could no longer do because of our restrictions. So instead she turned it and made it into, you know, something just as great as she normally does. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, she's very inspirational. I love her. I think she's great. So enough about Kelly.
No, we can talk about Kelly for the rest of the time. That's great stuff.
Oh, there's several coworkers like Sherry who ran our camps this summer. My son was in camp all summer and he had the best time. So I can't say enough about the people who have during this crisis come through and done amazing things. So
the stories of the people who have truly, and again, it goes back to that. I just think it's such an impactful quote, the idea that we're not about the programs, we're about the impact. When you buy into it and you're able to look at it through that lens, and you're amazed at all of the things that we're still able to accomplish. But it's a decision that people have to make and be willing to look at it different, because it's not the way we've always done things.
No, and I guess there have been times during this crisis that people have said, no, we can't do it, and it's made us think. It's kind of played devil's advocate. So it has been good at some times, but I guess it depends on the situation and where it's coming from. And
yeah, this isn't to say that you just blindly go forward and if you have a bad idea, you go forward with a bad idea. But the idea about it is again, it's about impact. It's not about creating a product or a thing. It's like, okay, what is the best thing that we can do to impact the youth in our community? That becomes the goal. And then you're just kind of constantly working towards that, as opposed to being like, no, like we have to run our, you know, Camp Kaboom summer program, because we've run our Camp Kaboom summer program for 20 years. And that's what we have to do. That's not something we can do this year. There's a million reasons why we can't, but what can we do to make sure that these children still have a safe space to go to, we're still putting smiles on their faces, and they're still being able to kind of get that recreation and that enjoyment that we should be providing them.
Yes, definitely. I love that. And so the last thing that you're all about is not worrying about being right, but doing the right thing. So if you want to explain that a little bit.
So this one is a personal experience. As a young leader, I found myself in positions where I was acting as if what I thought a manager or a leader should act like. And, you know, this vision that you see on TV of this disciplinarian and almost wanting people to not wanting to be challenged. I'm the boss, do as I say, this kind of very compliance-based attitude. And I think it's a really easy trap to fall into. The best leaders that I've had in my life and the most dynamic people and the people that I still think about to this day were the ones who were willing to say crazy things to me that I never would have dreamed of saying at 24, like, I don't know, or what do you think we should do? Things that I could never picture myself saying at that point. But I realized that vulnerability in leadership and being willing to kind of come out and make decisions more communal, get input from people on the front lines who are going to be directly impacted by the things that are going on, generally are going to lead to making a better decision. We get ourselves in trouble when we become emotionally attached to an idea. And then all of a sudden it becomes, you're disagreeing with my idea, so it's a personal affront on me, and it becomes more difficult for me to let go of that. Our best case scenarios and these best work environments, and you're talking about culture earlier, which is like my love language, but these organizations that you want to copy, the Disneys, the Googles, the Pixars, these groups that have this incredible culture of just everyone freely being able to discuss ideas and conversations, and the understanding the goal is to get better regardless of where better comes from. And there's a lot of there's this checking your ego at the door aspect where I think sometimes, not everybody, and I'm again, own experience, this was something I definitely struggled with when I first got into management, was just, no, it has to be my way. I'm the boss. It has to be my idea. It has to come from me. I have to be the one leading this. And what you start realizing is, okay, I'm the right idea or better doesn't matter where it comes from. So we've really started focusing this idea, and I'll ask people this all the time when they'll come to me and I'm upset with such and such because they're being negative or they're not, don't want to do this, blah, 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 blah. Okay. Are you more concerned right now with being right? Or are you more concerned with doing the right thing? Are we willing to look at these alternative point of views to try to figure out if there's something in there that is going to make this idea better? Is it leading us towards continuous improvement? Or are we fighting this just simply because of ego and we want to make sure that we're right? One of the great ones with this is a little more Jason cliches, but I hate the phrase best practice because it implies, the word best implies this is as good as we can do and we're never going to be able to do this is it. This is what we do. And I think it creates an environment and a culture in which people feel like they're not able to challenge status quo and try to find ways to make things better. So I don't know what you call it, better practices. I know Nick Neely calls them next practices. There's a lot of different terms on there, but I am 100% convinced that the phrase best practice stops growth, and it creates cultures in which staff do not feel comfortable finding better ways to do things. But yeah, it's the whole idea of I want to do the right thing over, it's not about being right, it's about doing the right thing. Really just, it's mostly ego. It's mostly just being willing to understand that good ideas can come from anywhere. It doesn't have to be my idea. It doesn't have to be your idea. At the end of the day, it's going to be our idea. And then we're all going to have roles to play in making sure that it's implemented and making sure that we are getting the best out of whatever it is that we're trying to do.
And I think that's kind of a maturity thing. I think it comes with maturity and experience. I will openly admit that probably 5 years ago, I was one of those leaders who, this is my idea, we're going to do it this way. And when someone would come to me and say, hey, Marissa, that's not going to work because of this, it was more of a power struggle than it was, oh, shoot, they're right, you know? And I am a huge proponent of asking the frontline staff, is this going to work? An example about 2 years ago when I was overseeing a fitness center, we decided to change our hours. We were only bumping up our open time by a half hour. We were going to go from opening at 5:30 to 5 a.m. Okay, we put everything in place. Everyone agreed. Well, none of us checked in with our maintenance, like our facility maintenance guy who comes in and, you know, does all of his work while the building is closed. So, of course, I send out this email to everyone, all right, you know, great news, in 2 weeks we're going to start opening at 5 a.m. instead of 5:30. Well, then he came to me and was very upset and said, Marissa, you just took away a half hour of my time to get stuff done in this building because I have to get into the women's locker room when there's no one in the building. So you have to ask a lot of those frontline people and the behind the scenes people, is this going to work? It might seem like an easy, oh, I just got to make sure I've got someone who, you know, who's willing to come in a half hour earlier now to come open the building. No, there's other factors in it. So I think when we make decisions, we need to really think about who it impacts. Is it impacting our frontline staff? Is it impacting the maintenance department? Is it impacting our parks department? Really think about it. You know, we might be getting a lot of requests to open up our facility a half hour earlier, close it a half hour later, but how is that really impacting us and how is that impacting what we're getting done?
I think the really important thing there, and I think this is another part that we can kind of tie into COVID, is this idea. It's like, okay, we might make a decision at first without taking in all of our thing, without taking in all the feedback that we needed. Are we willing to change on the fly? Or are we going to be so stuck in our ways where we're like, nope, this was my decision and I made it and I'm going to dig my heels in and just stick with it? And I think that vulnerability that it comes from being able to come out. I don't think, for me, nothing develops more trust for me and a leader than when someone can come out and say like, hey, that's on me. I made a bad decision and we're going to learn from it. We're going to do better and we'll get them next time. And so that those experiences, I think, are really important for us to be able to go through. I think COVID has taught us a lot in this kind of idea where we've been chasing this moving target for the last, I don't, what are
six
we at?
Months.
6 months now?
Yeah, oh, 6 Lord. Months, I know.
Yeah. So you're chasing this moving target and I think it's probably helped some of us to be more comfortable in gray areas and understand that we don't necessarily have all the answers. I remember doing a training during and telling people, hey, we're not going to require you to enforce patrons wearing masks inside as we were bringing all of the staff back. In the training, an alert came through to the state saying that masks are going to be mandatory inside. And we had to change the entire directive in the middle, right there on the spot. That's the world that we're living in right now. What's true today is not necessarily going to be true tomorrow. So all of us have to get a little more comfortable with like, okay, this is what we're going to do right now. I am open to feedback. I want to hear your ideas. And I would definitely want to know ways that this can get better. And those types of situations where we make changes and we don't necessarily get all the feedback that we need initially, when that does come forward, are we going to be willing to be like, hey, that's on us. I hear what you're saying. And you're, yes, this will make it better. So this is what we're going to do to move forward.
Yeah. And I think really, like you just said, this has taught everyone to be more flexible, not just employees. Like, hey, I told you, you had to wash your hands for 20 seconds yesterday, but now it's 30 seconds. Or I told you that you don't have to wear a mask. Well, now you do. And it's even taught some of our program participants who were normally a little bit stubborn and difficult. Hey, you got to be flexible with us. We may have to completely shut down again next week. Who knows? I mean, so I think it's taught all of us to be a little bit more flexible, I would hope a little more compassionate, and understanding of the tough decisions that we have to make. We're not doing it because we're trying to make your lives difficult. We're doing it for your safety. So I think this has been a really great time to teach everyone flexibility and to teach them why we make decisions and that it does come from a good place. We don't do it to make their jobs more difficult. I didn't decide to open up the building a half hour earlier to make our maintenance guy's job more difficult. I just thought that I was doing a good thing. So, but like you said, owning up to it, and that's another maturity thing, being able to say, shoot, I am so sorry. We haven't announced this to the public yet. So let's go back and figure this out.
Yeah, and let's discuss this. Let's discuss this and find something that's going to be mutually beneficial.
And thankfully he was able to move his schedule around a little bit, but you know, you make these decisions and then in hindsight you go, oh, that was not good. So moral of the story, check in even with your maintenance guy before you make a decision, because it may impact his job as well.
Maintenance guys make the world go round.
Yes. Yes. And that's probably the most beneficial part of your internship for those who are listening who are in college still. When you spend a week with your parks department or your maintenance department, you will learn how important they are, and you cannot do your job without them. So I love them. We try to bring them donuts and bagels and things like that, and leave them your leftover food from your events, things like that. Feed them well, take care of them. They let you do what you can do. So
100%. Yeah.
So that's pretty much all we were going to cover in terms of what you wanted to share with us today, Jason. So what are three takeaways you want to make sure that our listeners write down, take away, and enact after they listen to this?
I think it falls right into these kind of sound bites, as I like to call them, Jason cliches. So I think we need to be reminding ourselves every day, are we putting our mission above task? What is it that we're celebrating in our organizations? Are we celebrating tasks, or are we celebrating impact? Are we celebrating those people that are in our organizations that are going above and beyond to make people's lives better every day? The separating of I can from I can't, the decision that we make every day to look at to look at everything that comes our way as an opportunity, no matter how bad it might look, what is it that we can do in this situation, as opposed to looking for reasons not to do something. Another thing I like to say, saying I can't is an excuse to not do more work. It's a very easy thing to do. I can is always going to be more difficult. So being able to accept that and be willing to take on that additional responsibility. And then last but not least, make sure that your focus is always on doing the right thing, not being right. Don't let your ego get in the way. Don't focus on it being a personal, it should never be a personal affront if someone disagrees with your idea. The goal is to get better, regardless of where better comes from. And that only comes from creating an environment in which everybody feels free to share their ideas and opinions. And that's going to start with a leader who creates that environment and is able to share that vulnerability.
I love those. And one last, the million-dollar question. What does it mean to you to raise the bar in parks and recreation?
Man, we could probably do another hour. we'll get out of here quicker than that. I think for me, raising the bar in anything starts with what it is that you expect. And raising the bar just means raising our expectations. So the question right now, I think that's on a lot of people's minds is what is it? What is our lane? What is our role in our communities? And I think with a lot of the things that are going on around us and this kind of social awakening that we're living through right now, I know that there's been a lot of debate as to how invested we should be getting into parks and recreation. I was personally moved greatly by the statement that NRPA President Christine Stratton made back at the end of May, where she set the stage for where the bar should be for us and really was a call to action. I mean, she flat out came out and said, it's never been more important for our industry to be a leading voice for social equity and inclusion. We are in the community building business. We are in the business of creating joy and supporting health and well-being and everything tying into this fundamental belief that everyone deserves a great park. They do. Everyone deserves a great park. Everyone deserves great facilities. Everybody deserves great programs. And so I find myself in having conversations with some people who will come forward and be like, this isn't really our lane. This isn't what we should be doing. Nah, like it's right there. It's one of our pillars. It's not only our job. It's not only our responsibility. It's our obligation. It's our obligation to drive this charge in the communities that we serve and ask ourselves again, what is it that we can do in our communities to have an impact on social equity? Are we challenging status quos? Are we making sure that our spaces are inviting and our programs are equitable? Our hiring practices within our organizations? Are we making sure that we're doing the things that we need to do to drive that change? Big thing right now that's going to be coming up is this whole idea about voting access. What are we doing with our facilities and spaces to try to find ways to maybe we can be part of the solution in our communities to make sure that these underprivileged communities have the ability to have their voice heard come November? There's a lot we can do. And it just starts with looking at it from what can we do and having those conversations. But again, being willing to do it. So the raising the bar for me right now is a social equity component. It's become something that has really resonates with me and something that I want to make sure that I'm championing and help drive forward. But that's where I'm trying to go.
That was awesome. I don't know about everyone else, but I feel so inspired to go and do better today, tomorrow, next week. I think this has been kind of like one of those sessions at conference where you leave and you're like, I want to go do something now. I want to go make that change. So thank you so much, Jason. You've energized me. I'm pretty sure you've energized our listeners, and I'm sure we'll have you back on the show. Yeah, this was so much fun. Jason, how can our listeners reach out to you if they have any questions?
Find me on LinkedIn to start. You can shoot me a message on there. I love talking about all of this stuff, workplace culture, anything at all. But Yeah, Jason Elisalde, Elisalde. And look forward to hearing from everybody.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jason. And we'll talk to you later.
Thank you so much, Marissa.
Thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. And we'd love to know, what was your biggest takeaway from the episode? Let us know by dropping a comment in our Instagram post or over on LinkedIn. Hope to connect with you soon. Have a great week, you guys. Stay safe and get outdoors. And we'll see you next week.